For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
We are in Shmuel, Perek Yud, chapter 10, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. It is March the 13th. So Shaul has just become king, and he did not tell his uncle that he was king, but he is king. Va'yatzeik Shmuel es ha'am el Hashem ha'mitzvah. And Shmuel gathered the nation to Hashem in Mitzvah, which is a place. So this is Shmuel gathering everybody together. So he's now going to dramatically show everybody who the king is. Vayomer al bnei Yisrael, he said to the Jewish people, Kol amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, so says Hashem, the God of the Jews, Anochi ha'leisi es Yisrael mimitzrayim, I brought the Jews up from Egypt. Vo'atzil eschem b'yan mitzrayim, I saved you from the Egyptians. U'miyad kol amam lachos, and from all the kingdoms, halochatzim eschem, that have pressured you. Ve'atem hayom me'aftem es Elokeichem, but you today have forsaken, or it must be a better
rejected.
Word. Rejected, better word, right. Rejected your God. Ashehu Moshiach lachem mikora osechem v'tzar osechem, that he saves you from all your evils and all of your pains. But Tomru lo, and you said to him, Ki melech tassim oleinu, put a king over us. V'atah, now he siyasul bifnei Hashem, stand before Hashem, l'shiv teichem ula'al feichem, according to your tribes and according to your thousands. So he's about to have the king chosen from the people, but he starts off, as he has already told them, that this is a rejection of Hashem, that you want a king at this time. And as we've explained, the Jews were premature in wanting a king.
Is this Samuel speaking? Because he says, thus said Hashem.
He's quoting Hashem.
So Hashem is saying, you rejected me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pasuk Chav, verse 20. Vayakrev Shmuel es kol shivtei Yisrael, and Shmuel brought close all the tribes of Yisrael. Vayilached shevet Binyamin, and the tribe of Binyamin was designated. What he did is he took he made a goral, he made a lottery. He took pieces of parchment with the names of all the shvatim, of all the tribes, and then he reached his hand in and pulled one out, and out came the tribe of Binyamin. And he brought close the tribe of Binyamin according to its families. And it was the family of Matri that was chosen when he put all the names of the families into a lottery. He chose one, and it was the family of Matri. And then he took all the names of the individuals in the family of Matri. Vayilached Shaul ben Kish. And Shaul ben Kish was designated. So the lottery pulled out Shaul, the son of Kish, Vayivakshuhu, and they sought him, Balonim Tzad, they couldn't find him. So he was gone, he wasn't there. Vayishalu od Bahashem, and they asked Hashem again, Hava od Halom Ish, did any man come here? In other words, where is he? Vayomer Hashem, Hashem said, Hinehu nechba el hakelim, he has hidden with the vessels, with the utensils. He's in the closet, hiding from the limelight. Vayarutsu, they ran, vayikachuhu misham, they took him from there, vayisiatsev besocham, and he stood in the midst of the nation, vayigbami kol ha'am, and he was taller than the entire nation, mishichmo v'mala, from his shoulders and up. Vayomer Shmuel kol ha'am, Shmuel said to the entire nation, hari'isem es ashabachar bo Hashem, have you seen the one that Hashem chose? Ki ein kamohu b'chol ha'am. For there is no one like him in the entire nation. And this is Shmuel talking. Shmuel says, there is no one like this person in the entire nation. The entire nation cried out, and they said, long live the king. And Shmuel spoke to the nation the law of the kingdom, which he already told them before. But now he reiterated to them all the rules that a king has sweeping powers and what he's going to do. Vayichtov v'sefer, he wrote it in a sefer, in a book, in a scroll. Vayanach lifnei Hashem, he placed it in front of Hashem, meaning he put it in next to the Aron, I believe. Wait a minute. Sorry. He put it... He put it with the Aron. So it was now going... That obviously gives it extreme importance. Vayishalach Shmuel es kol ha'am ish l'beis, and Shmuel sent everybody home. Sent each man to his household. V'gam shol halach l'beis, Givasa. And Shmuel also went to his house to Giva. Vayelchu imo hachayol asher naga elokim b'libam. And the chayol, the chayol sometimes means army, but here it means the group, went with him. What group? The group that Hashem touched their hearts, which means people who were God fearing. They went with Shaul. Uvnei v'liyal amru, but those who threw off the yoke of Hashem said, Ma yoshienu zeh. What's this guy going to save us? Who is this guy? Shaul. Vayivzuhu, and they degraded him. They did not bring him any gifts. But Shaul was quiet. He did not respond. There's two important points to make over here. One is that in Pasuk Chavez in verse 22, when Shaul was not to be found after he was chosen, then they asked, where is Shaul? So Hashem says he's hiding with the utensils. So so when that happens,
doesn't that sound funny to anybody?
That he's hiding with the utensils?
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Well, he was hiding. So it says that they asked Hashem. So the Medrash says that when it says the utensils, it means the Medrash is, yes, he was hiding with the utensils, but when he emerged, he said, perhaps it's not really me. Like, you know, it was a lottery, and I'm uncomfortable taking this position until you ask the Urim v'Tumim, that Shmuel should ask the Urim v'Tumim, the Choshen, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, ask and let the lights of the stones light up to say that Shaul is the correct person to be king.
But shouldn't he have said that earlier? Shmuel
already told him, but it wasn't a public thing yet.
Didn't he put oil on his head yet?
Yeah, that already happened. But it wasn't public yet.
Right.
So now that it's a public thing, he asks for that confirmation, and Shmuel does ask the Urim v'Tumim, that's what it means, the kalim, the utensil, it means the garment of the Kohen Gadol, and Shaul's name does appear on the stones to confirm that, yes, Shaul is to be the king of the Jews. Yeah.
The lottery, is it just, are we told there was a lottery? I mean, since he was already chosen ahead of time, so it had to have been the name of Binyamin that was...
Yes, but this was in front of all the Jewish people. Before, it was Hashem telling Shmuel privately, and Shmuel told Shaul privately. Now, this is a public thing. So this is to prove that he is the right man.
So, who's wearing the breastplate?
I assume the Kohen Gadol.
Who is that?
I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
So, Samuel was the head. He was the head judge.
Well, yeah, that's what he's been until now.
And the head of the people.
Yeah.
Sort of like a king?
He was treated as the leader.
And the Kohen Gadol is a spiritual leader.
Yeah.
But we don't know who that was.
Well, I don't know who that was.
Okay.
Now, so Shaul here demonstrates his humility and his tzmius, his modesty. He doesn't want the spotlight. It's not something that he asks for. He is made king. He hides. He asks for confirmation. And finally, when he turns out that he is king, and Shmuel makes that incredible statement, Ki ein kamohu b'chol ha'am, there's no one like him in the entire nation. He is the most fit to be king. So then everybody goes home. And Shaul also goes home. He goes home. Doesn't go build a palace. He doesn't go and form a government. He goes home. People who had Yirat Hashem, who feared God, followed Shaul, an entourage, and essentially accepted his yoke, even though he wasn't demanding it. But they made him their king. Others said, who is this guy? Because Shaul did not display any authority. And their feeling was, who is he? So they treated Shaul as if this was some sort of an election, and they didn't vote for him, so they don't care about him. Whereas in reality, that's not what happened. In reality, he was chosen by Hashem. This was not an election. This was Hashem's decision, and he is the king. And he has all sweeping powers, and they are just as subjugated as anybody else. But they refused to accept him as king. Now, there was no reason for anything to happen. Nothing had happened yet for Shaul to have proven himself as king. So Shaul is kemacharish, he's quiet. He doesn't do anything to assert his authority, which, as you would expect, is in keeping with Shaul's personality. He's not asserting his authority. He didn't want to assert himself at all. He hid. He didn't tell his uncle that he was king. He asked for confirmation. He goes home. He's not asserting his authority. Now, it's not that he is some sort of a pushover. As Shmuel himself says, this is the greatest person, most qualified person to be king, which means he has the qualities it takes to be king. So that means he can't possibly be a pushover, but he chooses not to act in an assertive manner right now. Did he do the right thing?
We don't know yet, do we? Mm-hmm. Not very kingly.
It's not very.
The whole thing's not very kingly.
Not very kingly.
A king has to behave like a king.
Well, didn't David HaMelech do? Maybe I'm making a wrong analogy, but when he was cursed out, didn't he like keep silent also? Was it Shimi?
Ben Gera.
He did it out of humility. He realized it was from Hashem. So okay. I don't know if this is like the similar.
Well,
thing.
It's true, but in the end, he tells.
He had him killed eventually, right?
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to see. At this point, we're going to leave it as an open question. Did Shaul behave correctly in just going home and not asserting himself as king? Okay? It would have been rather difficult to assert himself as king because there was nothing that happened that would allow for him to assert himself. There was no event. But the event is about to present itself. The next parak, next chapter, now will have a major event which clearly Hashem has brought about so that Shaul will be able to assert himself. We'll see. Yeah.
So when they did the lottery, did we as a nation, we saw it, we saw it being done, and did we conclude that this is Hashem's way, or
yeah.
did we just say, this is just the lottery?
No.
He got lucky.
If it was done that way by Shmuel, it was because the people believed in that method as being appropriate.
So then if that's so, then why did some of the people say, well, who is this guy?
Because he didn't do anything to assert himself.
Well, that's not necessarily the behavior that you do when you know this is, God chose.
Depends how you feel about him. Depends how you feel about subjecting your own will to God. Right? Okay. Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11. Vayal Nachash HaAmoni, Nachash, the Ammon king, came up. That was his name, Nachash. Vayichan al Yavesh Gilad, and he encamped against Yavesh Gilad, which was a city nearby Ammon, and he encamped with an army against that city. Vayomu Kalan Sheyavesh al Nachash, so the people of Yavesh Gilad said to Nachash, cross lanu vris, make us a covenant, and Abdeka will serve you. Now, don't attack. They were scared of him. They said, don't attack us. We will, we'll serve you. Just give us terms, and you can, we'll pay you tribute, whatever it is. Vayomer alehem Nachash HaAmoni said to them, Bezos echros lachem. With this, I will make a covenant with you. Bimkar lachem kol ein yamin. With each one of you, gouging out your right eye. V'samtiach cherpa, I'll call Yisrael, and I'll make it a cherpa,
embarrassment,
shame on all of the Jewish people. So Nachash says to them, "You want to make terms? Fine. Okay, everybody gouge out their right eye." And he says it more as a form of, not of torture, but a form of degradation. I'm not just going to control you, I'm going to show that...
Disfigure.
Right, I'm going to disfigure you, I'm going to maim you. Chazal tell us that in addition to that, using the words in this pasuk, in this verse, that he also asked them for a Sefer Torah. To give me a Sefer Torah. Because the Sefer Torah says that Ammon is one of the nations that is never allowed
to marry
into the Jewish people. The males of Ammon are not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. So he said, give me a Sefer Torah and I will make a public burning of the Sefer Torah. If you want to make terms with me. Yeah, the Gemara says that. Yeah.
Is this against the Jewish people or is it against other people?
What do you mean against the Jewish people?
It says they wanted to take Ammon wanted to take over a certain area.
Yeah, it's Jews. Jewish
people.
Yeah, Jews in the city of Yavesh Kila. Yeah.
Okay.
Vayomer elav ziknei Yavesh. So the elders of Yavesh said to him, Heref lanu, wait for us, shivas yavim, give us 7 days. Finish the chamalachim, we will send messengers, b'chol gvul Yisrael, to all the boundaries of the Jewish people. V'im emoshia, if no one can save, v'im emoshia osanu, if no one can save us, v'yatzom elecha will come out to you. Nachash felt himself to be so powerful that no one amongst the Jewish people would be able to stop him. So they said, look, give us some time, we'll see if we can find anybody to help us. Because that's what Nachash wanted. Nachash wanted to show that the Jews can't do anything to stop me, because I am so powerful. And if I demand one of their cities that they gouge out their right eyes and I burn a Sefer Torah publicly, they can't stop me. And it's fine. I'll let them have 7 days to go and gather all the help they want from the Jewish people. It's not going to save them, because they can't stop me. I'm much more powerful than they are.
So you didn't respect Samuel?
Correct. But, what's that?
It's a foreshadowing in a way of what's going to happen later with Goliath.
Yes. Vayavo amalachim Gibas Shol. So the messengers came to Gibas Shol, which is where Shol lives. Vayidabur hadvar beozne ha'am. They said these words into the ears of the nation. Vayisu cholam et kolam ayivku. So the entire nation started to cry because they didn't feel they could help the people of Yavesh. This is an astonishing pasuk. Shol came from after the oxen, the cattle, in the field. So Shol the king was
in the field.
So he came after the bakar. Vayomer Shol, and Shol said, Mala am ki yivku, why is the nation crying? Vayesapu lo es divrei anshei Yavesh, and they told him what the people of Yavesh had said. Vatitzvach ruach elokim al Shol. So the Spirit of Hashem came down upon Shol. B'shamo sadvar ma'ilu, when he heard these things, v'yichar po ma'odi, he was very angry. V'yikach tzemet bakar, he took the yoke of the oxen. V'yinatchehu, and he broke it to pieces. V'yishalach b'chol gvul Yisrael, and he sent the broken pieces to, he shattered it. Shaul was a very strong man. He shattered it, and he sent it to all the boundaries of the Jewish people. Biyad HaMalachim, in the hands of those messengers, Lamar saying, Ashreinenu yotzei acharei Shaul v'acharei Shmuel, whoever does not come out in war, after Shaul and after Shmuel, he includes Shmuel over here, so he puts his name first. That is a big step. He's the king. His name comes before Shmuel, but he still uses Shmuel's name. He drops Shmuel's name as well, not just his own. But whoever doesn't follow us out to war, so will be done to his oxen. The way that this yoke is shattered, that's what's going to happen to his animals. We're going to destroy his animals, which is a major amount of money. In other words, his possessions are going to be, he's going to lose his wealth. The fear of Hashem fell upon the nation. Notice, it doesn't say the fear of Shaul. The fear of Hashem, this is a good thing. They are recognizing now that Shaul is the king, and Shaul has authority, and the fear of Hashem falls upon them. They came out like one man. This was very effective. Vayifkedem bevazek, and he counted them using shards, shards of earthenware, because you can't count people, it's a prohibition to count people. Shaul is very careful with not counting people. It happens twice. Here and later on with the war with Amalek, he will not count people. David HaMelech is going to make a mistake. Much later, he will count people. But Shaul is clearly very careful not to do it. And so they each give him shards of pottery, and then he counts the shards of pottery. The Jews were 300,000, meaning their soldiers. The Ish Yehuda 30,000, and 30,000 from Yehuda. Most of the time, whenever the Jewish army is counted, it lists the number from Yehuda separately, because they were the leaders of the army. So Yehuda is always singled out as the separate as a separate thing. 300,000 in the army, 30,000 from Yehuda.
The 30,000 is additional.
It seems to be additional. Okay. Seems to be additional. Vayomru la'malachim abayim, and they said to the messengers who had come, Ko somru le'ish Yavesh Gilad. So you should say to the people of Yavesh Gilad, Machar tomorrow, Tiyalachem Teshua, there will be a salvation kichom hashamesh at the heat of the day, meaning the middle of the day, you will be saved. Vayavo amalachim, and the messengers came, Vayagidu l'anshe Yavesh, and they told the people of Yavesh, Vayismachu, they were happy. Vayomer anshe Yavesh, and the people of Yavesh said to Nachash, Machar neitzei aleichem, tomorrow we will come out to you. Vasisem lanu kechol hatov beinechem, you'll do to us whatever you want to do to us. If you want to gouge out our eyes, or gouge out whatever you want. Tomorrow we'll come out and you can do what you want. Now, the people of Ammon, Nachash, his people, they knew that they were going to be attacked. They knew, because if the people of Yavesh were now saying, tomorrow we're going to come out to you, well, they had sent for help, and now the help has probably arrived. It didn't faze them, because they were so powerful, they figured, we'll handle whatever they throw at us. And that will give us license to show that we are really in control of the Jewish people. Vayhimi Macharaz was the next day. Vayasem Shol Esam Shlosha Rashim. Shaul made the nation into three heads. He divided the army into three parts. Vayavo v'soch ha-machane, and they came into the camp of the Ammon people, be'ashmar es ha-boker, in the first watch of the morning. Vayaku es Ammon, and they struck Ammon, ad chom hayom, until the heat of the day. Vayihi ha-nish'arim vayafutsu, and those that remained scattered. There were not two together of anybody in of the Ammon people. There were no two soldiers that remained together. It was just individual soldiers running all over the place to avoid the onslaught. Vayomer ha'am el Shmuel. So now, that was clearly a salvation. So Shaul had just decimated a very powerful foe. Vayomer ha'am el Shmuel. The nation said to Shmuel, Mi ha'omer Shaul yimloch aleinu. Who's the people who are saying Shaul's going to rule over us? Meaning, in a degrading way. Tznuan Hashimun emisem. Give us those people. We're going to kill them.
Oh.
That they should dare to question Shaul's authority. That's what they said to Shmuel. Vayomer Shaul, but Shaul intervenes. Lo yumas ish vayomaz, and no man will die this day. Ki hayom asa Hashem teshua bi Yisrael. For today, Hashem has done a great salvation amongst the Jewish people. So he spares the life of those who had initially rejected his royalty, his kingship. Okay, I'm going to read the next... let's stop here. Let's stop. I know it's right before the end of the parak, the end of the chapter, but this really completes the thought. So Shaul becomes king. And Shaul's becoming king happens in stages, because as was said, Shmuel first tells Shaul he is king, and he gives him Musar. He tells him about serving Hashem, about fearing Hashem. He pours oil on his head, but it's all very quiet. No one knows about it. And then eventually he comes home, comes to his uncle, doesn't say anything. Then Shmuel gathers everybody together. He reiterates to them that you're wrong for asking for a king. It was the wrong thing to do, but Hashem has chosen the best man among you. And they do a lottery, and Shaul is picked. Shaul is hiding. He emerges from his hiding place, and he he then asks for confirmation and he gets it from the Urim Tumim. And then everybody goes home. And there are people who reject Shaul as king. Not overtly. They don't do anything. They don't. What I mean to say is, they don't not listen to one of his decrees, because he doesn't make any decrees. But they clearly say that they're not interested in his being king. Then an enemy comes against the Jewish people, a very, very powerful enemy, so powerful that he doesn't even care if the people of Yavesh have a week to go find whatever, find whoever you want. I don't care. And he gives them time. If you're not confident about your strength, you don't give your victim who you have under your thumb, who you could really get right now, you don't let them get away and come back later. If you can get them now. Unless you're supremely confident that doesn't matter what they do, I'll still be able to get them. So obviously Nachash was very powerful and very confident. They went and...
Very arrogant.
Very arrogant.
Anything
too.
Anything about his name being a snake.
Yeah, right.
Snake in the grass.
Yeah, obviously that's not a mistake. And they go, they go to Shaul, and Shaul is acting like a regular person, and he says, this is not acceptable. And now Shaul sees his opportunity to assert himself as king. So until now, there was no opportunity. Should Shaul have just made some decrees on his first day as king, just for the sake of showing his authority, meaning he just became king? So perhaps what Shaul should have done before everybody went home is said, okay, everybody listen up. As my first act as king, everybody is going to... What?
Give me tribute.
Give me tribute. Okay, I'm going to start a tax. That's not very popular, but that's the way it works. You wanted a king, right? Or as my first act as king, we're going to proclaim a national holiday today. No work. And everybody is to celebrate, you know, something like that. He doesn't do that. Now, was he wrong for not doing that? It would have been a very difficult transition for the people. The people have never had anybody like this, a real authority figure. They've had Shmuel, but Shmuel was accepted by the people because of his incredible stature as a Navi, as one of the greatest Nevi'im to ever live, equated to Moshe and to Aaron. So they accepted him. Plus, Shmuel had saved them from the Plishtim several years earlier in an amazing fashion. So had Shaul just started demanding respect and authority, it's not so clear what would have happened. And Shaul decided he's not going to do that. That's not the route he's going to take. He's not just going to start asserting himself. He's going to wait for the opportunity to present itself when he will assert himself. And that's what he does. When Nachash comes to the Jewish people, it seems that this was what Shaul was waiting for. Shaul knew that at some point or other, Hashem would provide for him the opportunity to flex his muscles as king. And Shaul, in his great humility and his great modesty, prefers to go that route. And there's no reason for us to fault him for going that route. And that's what he does. And then he seizes the opportunity. What's going on over here? People are crying. They tell him. He says, unacceptable. And then he asserts himself. He doesn't say, anybody want to volunteer for the army? Would you please come join me? It's not what he does. He smashes the yoke, sends it around, and he threatens. And he said, you had better be here. If you don't show up, then you're going to be in trouble. Now, he does drop Shmuel's name as well, as we pointed out. He says, anybody who doesn't follow me and Shmuel out to war are in trouble. So there is that, if you want to call it, you could call it a weakness, that he doesn't want to just use his own name. But on the other hand, Shmuel is still alive. It's not like Shmuel isn't alive anymore, and Shmuel has been the leader until now. It could also be an act of humility in saying that I'm not going to ignore the fact that Shmuel is still here, and Shmuel is still a great leader. I am first in line, because I'm the king, and therefore, my name precedes Shmuel's name. But he doesn't ignore Shmuel. In fact, it might have even been a greater assertion of his authority to mention Shmuel's name. Because if you don't mention Shmuel's name, then perhaps you're just afraid to call attention to the fact that now you're in charge and not Shmuel. But if you're willing to say Shaul and Shmuel instead of Shmuel and Shaul, you are calling attention to the fact that I am now in charge. And Shmuel is also a great man, and he's a great leader, but he's second in command, not first anymore. And this is what I am demanding, that you follow me out to war. So Shaul does assert himself in a big way. Mm-hmm. And the people respond. They're afraid of Hashem, it says. Pachad Hashem. So this is apparently this is the right way to do it. Shaul is now asserting himself. 330,000 people show up for war, as they should. And they go out to war, and it is an unbelievable success. Absolutely, they rout this extremely powerful nation and war and army. So Shaul is now in the driver's seat, to the point where the people who support Shaul are now absolutely indignant that anybody could have ever questioned Shaul's authority. And they say, that's it. Where are those people? We're killing them. But then,
did they mean that?
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. They were more b'malchus. They were rebellious.
Uh-huh.
You rebel against the king. That is it. There are no second chances. That is the halacha. Person rebels against the king, they're finished. Death. But Shaul spares them. Shaul says, today was a great salvation. No one's going to die. Why did Shaul not have them killed? If he was to really assert his authority, shouldn't he have had them killed?
He's a sensitive man.
It sounds like
he's a sensitive leader.
Okay.
And he wanted to emphasize that Hashem was the one who had done it.
Okay.
For what, you know, if he doesn't really feel threatened.
Okay. So you're saying he was confident.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's connected to the fact that Hashem brought salvation for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, so just a guess, maybe it would have taken away the joy of Israel.
Okay.
It would have, ruined the celebration.
This is a celebratory time, yeah. So we're not going to go and kill people.
I mean, yeah, it kind of makes things a bit sour, doesn't it?
Okay. You think?
However, on the other hand, it's reminiscent, it's a foreshadowing of what he does to Akkad.
Okay. So this underscores Shaul's greatness and at the same time his weakness. And Shaul, remember, we have to be very careful about criticizing Shaul. We're talking about a giant of a man. I want to tell you that the Gemara relates a story. Just if we're talking about criticizing Shaul, I will probably repeat the story when we get to it later on. But later on, it's going to say that Shaul was a year old when he became king. Obviously, it doesn't mean he was a year old. So the Gemara says, what does it mean he was a year old? It means that he was like a year old child, that he had no sins.
Mm-hmm.
So the Gemara relates a story that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, one of the Talmudic sages, said, well, maybe it means he's like a year old baby, that he's filthy. Like a year old child will be sometimes be filthy and soiled, and maybe that's what it means. So the Gemara says, that night, Rav Nachman had a dream, and he saw angels of calamity about to attack him for having said that. So he got up in the morning, and he said, Nanesi lachem atmos Shaul ben Kish. I have spoken disrespectfully about you, the bones of Shaul, son of Kish. So in order to make up for the fact that he had spoken disrespectfully. He went to sleep that night, and again he had a dream of these angels of calamity attacking him. So the next day he got up and he said, Nenesi lachem, I have pained you, I have spoken disrespectfully about you. Atzamos Shaul ben Kish, the bones of Shaul, the son of Kish, Melech Yisrael,
okay.
King of the Jews. And then he stopped getting the dream. So you see how careful you have to be. Shaul, despite the fact that we are going to read about this, the most, as I tell you, he is one of the most tragic figures, perhaps the most tragic figure in all of Tanakh. And we're going to read about his downfall. Shaul is going to have a rough time of it, and he's going to do things wrong. We've got to be very, very careful. We're talking about a giant of a man, in not just in his physical stature, but in his spiritual level was huge. And although he's going to have a rough time as king, but it does not diminish the fact that he was of great stature. the Shaul was the most qualified person to be king. He had what it takes to be king. But it seems that in certain areas he used misplaced either humility or modesty. His very greatness, that he was such a humble and modest man. Mm-hmm. But as king, there are times when that's misplaced. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Mipnei ma nena Shaul. Why was Shaul punished? Which means, not why was he punished, but why did he end up doing things that eventually got him punished and he lost the kingdom? Mipnei shemachal al kavodo. Because he forgave what people's
his honor.
He forgave his honor. He did not punish these people. He should have allowed them to be killed. Because he did not stand up for the honor of the king, therefore he lost the right to remain as king. Now, this is not a sin. That's not why he loses it. He's going to lose it because, as we mentioned, because of Amalek, because of other things that are going to happen later. But this is, as you said, a foreshadowing. This shows something about Shaul which eventually undermines him as king. Now, the Gemara then wants to understand this. What does that mean that you're supposed to take revenge? The Gemara says, what do you mean? We know you're not supposed to take revenge. The Gemara says that, referring to a Talmud Chacham, but a king would be even greater. The Gemara says, Rav Yochanan says, in the name of Shimon Yotzadok, listen to this, Kol Talmud Chacham, any Torah scholar, She'enu nokim v'noter kinachash, that doesn't take revenge and bear a grudge like a snake, Eino Talmud Chacham. He doesn't deserve the title of Torah scholar. Mm-hmm. A Torah scholar has to take revenge and bear a grudge like a snake. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that mean? I'm wedding. Torah says, Lo si kom velo si tor, don't take revenge, don't bear a grudge. What does it mean? So the Gemara goes on to explain what this means. The Gemara says, it doesn't mean in monetary matters. In monetary matters, the Torah says you're not allowed to bear a grudge. You're not allowed to take revenge. If a classic example is that if you come to my house and you ask me to borrow my lawnmower and I tell you no, and then the next day I come to borrow your shovel, whatever it is, right? So you're not allowed to say to me, well, you didn't give it to me, so I'm not giving it to you. You're not allowed to do that. That's revenge. You're also not allowed to say to me, well, you didn't give to me, but I'm not like you. I'll give to you.
Yeah. You can't undermine them, right?
That's bearing a grudge.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, obviously, a Talmud Chacham can't do that.
Yes.
Right. The Gemara also says that even in other ways, even if it's not a monetary issue, the we know the Pasuk says, Hane'elavim ve'enam olvin, those who are insulted and do not insult back. Shomim cherpasan, those who hear their own shame. Ve'enam meishim, they don't answer back. A person who just takes it and doesn't answer back. Osin me'ava usmechen bi'asurin, they do out of love of Hashem, and they are happy with the affliction that they're going through. Alein ha'kasev omer, about them the Pasuk says, Ve'ohavav, those who love Hashem, kitseis Hashemesh b'gvuraso, is like the sun coming out in its strength. Yes. That is one of the greatest, one of the greatest acts of righteousness is to be insulted and not insult back. Not because you're a pushover, not because you have no self-respect, but because you say to yourself, this is up to Hashem, it's not up to me. The person who's insulting me, fellow Jew, it's not my place to give it back. Let Hashem take care of the problem. So so even in those sorts of things where it's not a monetary thing, you're not supposed to lash out, you're not supposed to take revenge. So what does it mean that Talmud Chacham is supposed to take revenge? So the Gemara explains what that means is that that he is to hold on to it. He's to hold on to remember the insult. That if someone insults a Talmud Chacham, someone speaks disrespectfully towards him, the Talmud Chacham should hold on to it. So the Gemara says, what does that mean, you should hold on to it? Well, you're not supposed to hold on to things like that. Don't we know? The Gemara says also that anybody who doesn't stand on principle and he lets go of things, then Hashem will do the same for him. But we say that on before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, right? If we just allow things to slide off, we're not going to hold on to it. We forgive others. Then Hashem will make sure that he treats us the same way. He won't take insult that we were disrespectful towards him. If we don't allow, right? So what does it mean? So this is what the final answer of the Gemara. The Gemara says that the Talmud Chacham needs to hold on to the fact that he was insulted, like the case of David where he was cursed by Shimon Gera, to the point where if others step forward and are willing to exact punishment from those who did it, mm-hmm. he should let it happen. Mm-hmm. He should let it happen. Unless those who did it come forward and ask forgiveness. If they come forward and ask forgiveness, he has to let go of it. But if they're still where they are, mm-hmm. and they're still insulting, and they're still acting that way, and others step forward and are willing to take them down, he should let it happen. Not what Shaul did. Here, Shaul was correct for not doing anything. When he was Kemacharish, he didn't say anything. That was correct. But when others stepped forward and said, where are those people? We're going to kill them. That's where Shaul should have let it happen. Now, why? What's the explanation for this? What is it? How does it fit? The Gemara here is talking about a Talmud Chacham, but obviously it's applying it to Shaul as king. And it applies all the more so to a king. And the reason is because a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, and a king even more so, has to deal with two things at the same time. When a Talmud Chacham or a king is degraded, insulted, attacked in some way, so there is the personal insult, there's the personal pride, and then there is the position. A person, no matter who they are, whether they are a king or Talmud Chacham, whatever it is, should not react because of personal insult, personal pride. A person has to be able to say, who am I? What do you mean? I should take revenge? It's not up to me. Hashem says don't take revenge. I'm going to let it go. Hashem is not about me. A person has to be able to do that. And that it's a very lofty level to be able to do that, to let it slide off and just say, it's not about me. That's a very lofty level, which we all have to aspire to at some point or other, to be able to say to let our egos go and not react, not get ruffled because of the personal pride. But a person who represents Torah, if he's a Talmud Chacham, and a person who represents the Jewish people, if he's the king, you can't let that go. You can't say, well, it's okay to insult the Torah. It's okay to insult the Jewish people. When you insult the king, you're insulting the Jewish people. When you insult the Talmud Chacham, you're insulting the Torah. I remember one time, Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Weinberg Zohar Racha, my Rosh Yeshiva, bless the memory, once gave a talk about someone, there was a great Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Shach, and there was a group that degraded him publicly. They degraded him. So he got up in yeshiva and he spoke, and he was generally spoke very calmly and very, you know, he just spoke in a very
mellow
way. And then with this particular thing, he let loose. He just let loose. And he was yelling and he was yelling. I can't reenact it because it would be too powerful, but he was yelling and he was saying, they tore the Sefer Torah apart. He said, could you imagine you were standing here, because he's standing in front of the Aron Kodesh, and someone would come up and take a Sefer Torah out of the Aron, throw it down on the ground and start tearing it to pieces. You would just sit there? You would just sit there? That's what they did. Because they insulted Rav Shach, who's the great Talmud Chacham. You can't just let that go. You can't let it go. Insulting the Torah is not excusable. And the same thing insulting the Jewish people. So, there has to be some holding on to of that terrible, terrible insult. that the king has to hold on to it, not for his personal pride, but for the pride of the Jews, the people, and the Talmud Chacham, not for his personal pride, but for the pride of the Torah. He's got to hold on to it. Where does it manifest itself to hold on to it? We're all human beings. It's very easy to hide behind that. Say, well, I'm not doing it for my personal pride. I'm doing it for the pride of the Torah. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to punch you in the nose. Right? It's very easy to delude ourselves into thinking that we're really acting on behalf of the Torah. We're acting on behalf of the Jews. But really, we're acting on behalf of ourselves. So that's what the Gemara is describing over here. That when it comes to the king / the Talmud Chacham's reaction himself, there can't be a reaction. There, he's got to let it go. He's got to let it slide. He's got to just say, I'm not gonna say anything back. Not only that, but if others step forward and say, we are not going to let this happen, that's where the king / Talmud Chacham has to say, okay, I'm not getting involved. Because there is what to punish for over here. The honor of the Torah cannot be excused. The honor of the people cannot be excused. But if the people who did the insult come forward and they say, forgive us, then the king / Talmud Chacham has to stop those who want to take revenge because they're asking for forgiveness. If they're asking for forgiveness, then that means that they are trying to undo what they did wrong. Well, then this is not a kind of thing where there's no way back. We're not trying to execute anybody who ever does anything, right? There has to be a way back. But until that point is reached, there has to be the opportunity, the ability for others to stand up for the kavod of Torah, for the kavod of the melech, for the kavod of the people, and punish. So this was a mistake. Again, it's not me saying it, it's the Gemara saying it, but this was a mistake on the part of Shaul. It was not an avera, wasn't a sin, but it was a mistake. And it underscores what will happen later with Shaul as well. Did the people who were doubting, did they step forward now and say, I'm so sorry? Did they?
I don't hear it.
So no, they clearly didn't. That's what the Gemara is saying. They didn't. Had they stepped forward, then it would have been correct to excuse them. But they didn't. Which means they still held on to their rejection of Shaul. That can't be tolerated. Now again, it shouldn't be the king who goes after them, but that others wanted to go after them to ensure that that sort of behavior is not accepted, that should have been allowed to happen.
It's hard these days because we live in like a generation where everyone's very lovey-dovey, very new agey, so it's very hard. I think it's challenging because it just seems so din-like, you know what I mean? And I think that's why I'm guessing.
It's not about lovey-dovey. It's about judgment and about, you know, in any generation, there are going to be people that don't support the government.
That's because, you can only say that because we live in a democracy. But that's not the form of government that the Torah espouses.
So throughout all generations...
In a monarchy, you support the monarch, and if you don't, you keep quiet. Because if you open your mouth, you're dead. And that's the way it has to be.
That's been true in all our Jewish...
That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be.
But has it been?
Yeah, we're going to see... Oh, we're going to see plenty of cases of people being killed because they stood up against the king. They weren't really, you know...
That's true in Goyish kingships as well.
Well, there are very few left that you can really point to.
I'm talking about the 1700s, the 1600s,
right.
1500s.
Right.
I think this also points up an interesting contrast with Moshe, who is the most humble person, and yet you don't find these kinds of episodes, you know? So it's not just an excess of humility, it's really misjudgment. I mean, because Moshe was even more humble.
Yeah. No, that's true. It's using it in the wrong context. Now, we have to be very careful because if Shmuel says he's the man, he's the most qualified, that means Shaul had the capacity to use his strengths correctly. It was an intellectual decision. He's not a weak person. But evidently he made these mistakes. I just want to mention, going back to what Dr. Clary said, we're so used to the opposition party. You can have an opposition party. Free speech. Those are very modern ideas.
I'm not talking about opposite. I'm talking about human nature.
Yeah, well,
it seems to me that, you know, out of thousands, I don't know how many people, you know, it seems unreasonable to me that 100% of the people would say, yes, this is our king,
no,
we love him.
No, that's true. No, you're right, that's unreasonable. But it is reasonable that 100% of the people don't say anything.
But at this particular juncture,
okay, all right.
Then
so.
It's a little iffy because
it's new. Because it's a new idea. Yes.
But to compare that, and you have to look at what's going on.
You can't just say. But evidently, they did not come back and beg forgiveness, which is what they should have done at this point.
Okay.
So you know that seems to be what the problem is over here.
Why would they possibly do that if they knew they could possibly die for that? Like, why would they be willing to do that if death was was their punishment?
Well, they could have come forward and apologized. The Gemara seems to be saying that once they ask for forgiveness,
it just seems so bold that they did that to begin with.
Yeah,
and not worry about their consequences.
The fact that they didn't worry about the consequences is more evidence that they did not regard him as king. Mm-hmm. They didn't think he had the power to do this.
Right, that's true too.
If you had made that cheshbon that he really is the king and he really could cut off my head, you would say stuff like that. You know, it's predicated on the fact that they didn't believe he was the king, you know, legitimate king.
Right. So that is this is the as you said, it foreshadows what's going to happen later. This is the beginning of Shaul's kingship, and he does assume the throne over here, and that's the next pasuk. The reason I stopped here is because even though it's right before the next chapter, is because here this is really these next two psukim really are part of the next chapter where they're going to have a celebration for Shaul's being king. Now that he's really there, they're going to celebrate it. And this, starting with this next pasuk from in Perek Yudalef, chapter 11, pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, which we'll do next time, is the haftorah for Parshas Korach. Which we do read during the year.
Rabbi, if we have a place for the Kohen Gadol to live, like in a beautiful home, or
there was not an official Kohen Gadol house.
Uh-huh.
Not then.
The Kohen Gadol of our people didn't even have, you know, a special house.
Then he didn't.
Yeah, back then I'm talking. Yeah. But so why would the people doubt that, you know, he's not king if he's going back home? Because there was no place for a king to live.
Yeah, okay, that's true. It doesn't seem that he did the wrong thing by going home. That seemed to be okay.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.